This is Amy Nesbitt, Associate Director and General Manager of the Ann Arbor Summer Festival.
And this is Jackie.
In this episode, AADL talks to Alan Brown, the Administrative Director in the early years of the Ann Arbor Summer Festival. We speak to him by phone from San Francisco, where he is the principal of Wolf Brown, an advisory to foundations, public agencies, and charitable organizations. Alan speaks of his fond memories of Eugene Power, the founding force of the festival, who offered him an unbelievable opportunity and a guiding hand. He remembers a gracious and generous Ella Fitzgerald, a panic moment with Marcel Marceau, and his encounter with other great performers who graced the festival stage. The Ann Arbor Summer Festival celebrates his 30th season in 2013. For more information about the Ann Arbor Summer Festival, go to a2sf.org.
Hi, Ellen.
Hi there.
How are you?
All right. I'm thinking about Ann Arbor and wishing I could be there with you.
Ellen, tell us about yourself. And how? Where did you come from, and what brought you to Ann Arbor?
Well, I was born in Minneapolis, and my family moved to suburban Detroit in 1969, and I essentially grew up in Birmingham well before it was a glitzy suburb. Wound up going to University of Michigan for my undergraduate degree. I studied vocal performance at the School of Music. So my heart is really in Ann Arbor, even though I've lived in Connecticut and now in San Francisco. I dearly love Ann Arbor and hope maybe someday to return.
Now, how did you become associated with the Ann Arbor Summer Festival?
Well, that's kind of a funny story. After I graduated college, I had a degree in vocal performance, which I joke now prepared me for a career in food service, which is exactly what I did. I started working at the Michigan Union in the food service department, initially for the art fair, and then I got hired full-time. And I was working at the union in 1984 when Gail Rector, who was then the director of University Musical Society, approached me about organizing food service for the outdoor component of the first Ann Arbor Summer Festival in 1984, which Gail was programming. The first festival was really mostly UMS-sponsored artists. So I got involved, and in the process of doing that, I met Eugene Power, who was the founder of the festival and chairman of the board at the time, and his executive assistant, who was a woman named Margaret Macialis. And I got to know them well in the course of organizing the Top of the Park. And following year, I was no longer at the Michigan Union, but they hired me to manage the Top of the Park for 1985, which was the year that they had hired Bob Alexander to be the executive director of the festival. Bob was Judy Dow's husband at the time and a great administrator, but there were some internal problems, which I won't go into, between sort of Gail Rector, Eugene Power, and Bob Alexander. And the bottom line is that Mr. Alexander left the festival after 1985. The programming had been a little too serious, pretty heavy on classical music, and the ticket sales didn't add up, and the festival nearly folded after its second year. But the Top of the Park had been very successful, very fun, and I'll never forget the night that Eugene Power called me at home and offered me a job as administrator of the Ann Arbor Summer Festival. I was 25, and I remember him, I think, he offered me $18,000 a year. So I had another offer for $20,000 a year to run be the operations director of the Greensboro Symphony. And I said, "Well, Mr. Power, if you could offer me $20,000, it would make a big difference." And he said, "Well, I don't suppose it matters much." And then he hired me. So that's how I first got started. I had no qualifications whatsoever to actually run an arts festival, aside from having run the outdoor component. So Gene Power took a huge gamble on me. And not coincidentally, the day after he hired me, he pledged $20,000 to the Ann Arbor Summer Festival in case he made a mistake. And I all of a sudden found myself as the staff director of a mid-sized arts festival, and just kind of exploded in terms of realizing what an opportunity I had and how much I had to learn. So many people supported me in that journey, but that's how I first got involved in the festival.
Now, how long were you the executive director?
Well, I have to say I was never the executive director.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, because that title implied a certain level of responsibility, which was not appropriate for me at the time, but I was the administrator, I think, for 4 years, and then finally they gave me the title of festival director, I think, the year before I left. I started in 1985, and I left Ann Arbor on October 8, 1990, so about 5 years.
What are some things that stand out in your memory as highlights of turning points, sort of key moments during your tenure?
Wow, there are so many. I mean, what I have with me still, I think about Mr. Power almost every day, because believing in me at a young age and giving me the opportunity that he gave me completely changed my life. And for that, I will always be incredibly grateful. And I've come to realize that the only way that I can repay him is by doing the same thing for other young people. So I work constantly with young arts administrators, with students in different arts administration programs, helping them with research projects, speaking to classes, and generally just trying to be a supportive colleague to young people. So that's what, honestly, that is the lasting effect of the Ann Arbor Summer Festival on me, which was profound, which was the opportunity that Eugene Power gave me. So in terms of other more mundane aspects, there are so many. I mean, the festival kind of turned around in 1986. I remember there was a board meeting where people were kind of wringing their hands over the programming and should we keep it classical or should we open it up to more popular artists? And, you know, there were people on both sides of the fence. And I remember Jay DeLay, who was the chairman of Comerica Bank at the time, he sort of put his fist on the table. He said, you know, we're not going to solve the problems of the world in the summertime. And that was kind of the moment where the festival opened up its programming to a wider range of artists, still some serious artists, but we were also able to program some more, you know, more popular musicians and so forth. And that was really a pivot point, which allowed me to book, you know, a wider range of jazz artists as well as some popular companies. But Marcel Marceau, as you may remember, was closely associated with the festival in the early years, and I presented him 13 times, I think.
Wow.
He was quite a character. my favorite moment was being in the stairwell between backstage and the green room at the Power Center. After his performance, I was taking him up to the green room to greet his fans, and we were in a vestibule. And he thought that we were locked in this vestibule, and he wheeled around to me and he said, "Avez-vous les clés?" Which was just, "Do you have the keys?" I have to remember that. Yes, I said, "I thought you couldn't talk." Anyway, it was one of those funny moments. But there were so many highlights, many of which I ought not to divulge, with artists like Sarah Vaughan, who was quite a character, and oh gosh, having limousine problems. After her performance, she was scheduled to go to Cincinnati, and her limo overheated. It was the hottest day of the summer outside the Bell Tower Hotel, and I had to drive her from Ann Arbor to Cincinnati.
Wow, would that be part of your duties as otherwise assigned?
Well, I mean, many of the festival artists thought I was the driver. They didn't know I was the festival director. I remember picking up Judy Collins at Metro Airport and bringing her back, and she was looking at her contract in the back, and she said, "Oh, I wonder who's opening for me tonight." And I turned around and I said, "No one, Miss Collins. You're the only artist on tonight's program." And she said, "Oh, that can't be true. I know there's someone opening for me." I said, "No, actually, there's no one." She said, "How do you know?" I said, "I'm the festival director." Anyway, but, you know, honestly, the highlight of everything was having the incredible privilege of presenting Ella Fitzgerald. That was a new event, actually. We started an event called the Summer Festival Winter Warm-Up, March 25th, 1989. And I just called up Ella Fitzgerald's a booking agent, and this was very near the end of her time performing, and just quickly got a date. It was a trio date, honestly, you know, in Hill Auditorium, which at the time was 4,167 seats, I think. And it was a miracle to be able to book Ella Fitzgerald, and it was actually not difficult. I'll never forget, she came up from L.A. 3 days early on the advice of her doctor to adjust to the time change. And she ensconced herself in the Bell Tower Hotel and carried on with the staff and invited them to sit with her watching soap operas and whatnot, and just charmed everyone. She allowed me to bring her to a benefit party before her concert, which almost never happens. And she was so gracious. I mean, at the airport, everyone asked for an autograph, and she obliged every request and thanked people for asking. And I said to her, I said, "Miss Fitzgerald, don't you grow weary of all this?" And she said, "No." She said, "My mommy taught me to be nice to people down here because you never know who you're going to run into up there." And she was just the most modest, lovely person, and certainly set the standard for other artists. And she gave a great, great concert. Hazen Schumacher introduced her from the stage, and she took the stage, and the entire auditorium, there was an outpouring of love and admiration that I'll never forget. And she sang an amazing program. Ron Brooks' trio opened for her. I got the local trio in on stage. So those are some of the highlights. There were so many others. You know, working with Palabolas, the dance company was hugely popular. Lar Lubavitch Company came a couple, I think three seasons in a row, and really made a footprint on the community. I started a relationship with Circle Repertory Company, which was at the time a prominent New York company, and they came out and mounted their first play of the season in Ann Arbor during our festival, and we got the premiere of a Craig Lucas play called Reckless. There were so many highlights, but those are just a few of them.
Well, maybe on the other side of things, were there some challenges within the management, oversight, running, development, you know, growth of the festival that stand out?
Well, that's a tough question. It was such a growth period for me and for the festival that it was all challenging. But I have to say, the team that I was so blessed to work with, which was Amy Harris, was the first development director of the festival. And Susan Polle was the first marketing director. You know, when you produce a festival, as you know, Amy, you have to be really aligned, because when the festival comes and you're all going a million miles an hour in different directions, you have to act as a unit, but often without having a lot of interaction. That was really, you know, when I think back, that quality of connection with the staff. You know, I've not yet found that in the rest of my professional life. There were challenges, as there are with any small arts organization with a large board, kind of managing the board at the time. I don't know if it still is, Amy, was half appointed by the mayor and half by the regents of the university.
There's affiliation with one or the other of those founding partners, but there's been a lot of openness to the interpretation of how those associations meet and match with the trustees and their
right.
current work situation or their historic mm-hmm. association with different groups. And mm-hmm. you had the great fortune of working with the full 34-member board, which is a very large board for an organization the size of the Ann Arbor Summer Festival. And for people who aren't as aware of the history, the board was created to essentially mirror the UMS board, the UMS mm-hmm. operations and board as or operations in total, as you may be aware, is significantly larger than the Summer Festival.
Yeah.
So it was just as large of a board, but a more modest mission and goal. So it had
right.
its own challenges to.
It was also a really great design in the sense that I had access to the highest levels of people at the University of Michigan. And for example, when I needed bike racks at the top of the Power Center parking deck, they appeared in 2 hours. You know, and honestly, it just couldn't have happened any other way to be able to have the cooperation of the plant department and parking and kind of all of that was greatly facilitated by Jack Weidenbach, being on the executive committee.
Yeah, and we're still quite blessed by both organizations. Members of the university as well as the city play key roles into this event being able to occur and be produced at the level it is now that other organizations who attempt even smaller scale productions in the area, in town,
right.
on campus or off, I think we really,
right.
in many ways, are incredibly blessed with great support from those organizations.
Right, right. It, you know, raising money was a challenge, particularly when people knew that Gene Power was behind it. And I think the Festival 400 was a great idea. That was a fundraising group that Bob Alexander and Judy Dow started, where it was people who pledged to give $400 a year for 4 years. And that created a wonderful sort of foundation of funding. But we'd get to the end of the year, and I'd pay as many bills as I could, and then we'd have a little shortfall, and I'd take the bills up to Mr. Power's office, and I'd sit with him, and we'd go through the bills, and he'd say, "What's that for?" And we'd go through the bills, and then after about half an hour, he'd grow weary of that, and he'd push the button on his auto dialer and call his banker and say, "Send the festival $25,000 or $50,000, and that's how we would make our budget. And of course, looking back on that now, I know that's not a sustainable, you know, business model. Any nonprofit that relies too much on one individual, but it's how the festival got started, and thanks to him, it was sustainable during the early years.
Yeah, it's taken a long time and a lot of different administrations and a lot of different devoted donors and community businesses, and actually
right.
receiving some of our first grants as an organization. It's only been in recent
yep.
years that we've received NEA grants. That shift has happened over time mm-hmm. to make for a better balance between contributed
right.
and earned revenue that has allowed the festival to not have to lean quite so heavily on angel donors
right.
who come in
right.
and swoop in the last minute and bridge the gap. We certainly continue to appreciate those angel donors.
Of course.
But it
and there, yeah, and don't get me wrong, there were many people who were very generous to
yeah.
the festival with their time and with their funds. I have to say that Judy Dow was incredibly generous and supportive. And Neil and Burnett Stabler were hugely supportive. I remember Harlan Hatcher, Alan Smith, the other, you know, university presidents. There were a lot of people who put a lot of effort into it.
Tell us what you're involved in these days in the San Francisco area.
Well, during during my years at the Ann Arbor Summer Festival, for a while there, our offices were in the East Engineering School before it was renovated. but we were grateful for the space, and I was the office was conveniently located about two blocks from the business school. So I had initially started an MBA program at night, and I realized that that was going to take 8 years. So I applied for admission to the full-time day program and got admitted. And so for 2 years, which would be 88 and 89, I went to school full-time and worked full-time running the festival. And I would stack my classes either first thing in the morning or at lunch or in the evening. And I would literally run out the door at lunchtime and go to statistics class and then go back to the office. And I allowed myself to socialize on Friday nights and then studied all day Saturday, Sunday, and then worked, obviously. It was tough. I was incredibly motivated because I never dreamt that I could be a Michigan MBA because I was from a musician. You know, I was from the music school. And in business school, you know, there were all these people who were going to go work for Ford and GM and McKinsey and whatnot, and they were all kind of had a very kind of big business perspective. And here I was running a small nonprofit and played the role of contrarian pretty well. Anyway, so I graduated with my MBA in 89 and took a new job and left the festival in 1990 after presenting Aretha Franklin in Hill Auditorium, which was quite an experience. I ought not to talk too much about. took a job as an entry-level consultant with a firm in Connecticut, and I spent the first few years doing feasibility studies for new arts facilities, new theaters and museums, and I just kind of grew naturally towards market research. And at the time, there was really no one doing market research in the arts sector. It was a natural fit for me. I love statistics. I love working with data. And it really took me sort of 10 years after I got my MBA to figure out that I really have a natural aptitude for working with data and doing market research. So that's how I make my living now. I have my own consulting firm. I'm based in San Francisco. My firm is called Wolf Brown, and I work for philanthropic foundations and arts group on evaluation projects and a variety of market research studies, including a study we're just about to release on college students' preferences in the arts. In a way, come full circle.
Music for this episode was Topsy Swing to Bop by George Bedard off his album Picking Apart the Past, with permission of the artist. AADL Talks to Alan Brown has been a production of the Ann Arbor District Library.